Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om 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 Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 1, Chapter 9, The Passing Away of Bhishma Dev in the Presence of Lord Krishna, Text 1. Sri Sutaruvacha Iti Bita Praja Drohat Sarvadharma Vivitsaya Tato Vinashanam Pragad Yatradeva Vrato Patat. Translation. Suta Goswami said, being afraid for having killed so many subjects on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Maharaj Yudhisthira went to the scene of the massacre. There, Bhishma Dev was lying on a bed of arrows, about to pass away. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this ninth chapter, as it is willed by Lord Sri Krishna, Bhishma Dev will impart instructions to King Yudhisthira on the subject of occupational duties. Bhishma Dev will also offer his last prayer to the Lord on the verge of passing away from this mortal world and thus become liberated from the bondage of further material engagements. Bhishma Dev was endowed with the power of leaving his material body at will and is lying down on the bed of arrows was his own choice. This passing away of the great warrior attracted the attention of all the contemporary elites, and all of them assembled there to show their feelings of love, respect, and affection for the great soul. Read the verse again. Sutaruvacha Iti bita praja drohat sarvadharma vivitsaya tato vinashanam pragad yatradeva vrato patat. Suta Goswami said, being afraid for having killed so many subjects on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Maharaj Yudhisthira went to the scene of the massacre. There, Bhishma Dev was lying on a bed of arrows, about to pass away. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Prachane Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschityadishtane Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Shivasati Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Vanchakapata Rubhyas Jagripa Sindhu Vyeva Chapati Dhanam Bhavane Vyo Vaishnava Vyunamonama. This is an interesting chapter we're just entering into. Passing of Bhishma Dev in the presence of Lord Krishna. And the whole situation of Maharaj Yudhisthira, just immediately following the Battle of Kurukshetra, which is described here, mentioned here, that he was afraid for having killed so many subjects. And the discussion goes on, of course. Well, the discussion goes on. And afraid is one way of putting it, but Maharaj Yudhisthira was actually more or less like devastated, really devastated, and perhaps we read about that. Anyway, yeah, so he was just completely overwhelmed that what have I done? What have I done? Because in that battle, there were, we hear, in fact, Srila Prabhupada says actually, 640 million warriors were killed. That is a lot. That's 10% of the population of planet Earth, or something like that. I don't know if you've ever seen a million people in one place at one time. I was in, we were in Dublin in 1979, I think it was, and the Pope came to Dublin, and Southern Ireland, the Irish Republic, they're very staunch Catholics. They're very staunch. And, you know, in Southern Ireland, Irish lingo, they would say, the Holy Father is coming. The Holy Father. Yeah, the Holy Father is coming. Anyway, they had their way of putting things. And shoot, they went into it. And he did a program in the main park in Dublin, and we were there, Hare Krishna, selling Pope badges, would you believe, to raise funds, anyway, okay, Hare Krishna. So, but we were there, that's the thing. And more than a million people came. They had a system for assigning people to different areas of the park, means it was just open space somewhere in the middle of Dublin. And so they were giving out tickets. It was free. They're giving out tickets, and so, you know, on your ticket you'd see you had to go this side or that side or whatever. So they gave out, they had printed 1 million tickets and they gave them out, but the people were still pouring through. Yeah, and it was quite a scene to see in this one place at one time, just stretched out in all directions, 1 million people plus. It's a lot, it's really a lot. But now, here, 640 million were killed. And we don't know. Well, we assume that every day they had some dead body disposal system. Otherwise, you know, on a field, because it's Kurukshetra, if you've been there, it's also just flat, open space, Kurukshetra. And, you know, that if you got six, you know, even not to speak of 640 million, if you just got a mere 200 million bodies strewn out on the battlefield, and you got to fight there in amongst these dead bodies, there's just dead bodies everywhere, make it very difficult to fight. So perhaps they had some dead body disposal service. Give them a call, we got a dead body, we got 100, we got 1,000 dead bodies here, please take them away. But I read a description of, what was it? I think the battlefield of Waterloo, if you've heard of that. Napoleon versus, who was it? It was the British Duke of Wellington. I think the Duke of Wellington versus Napoleon, and there is something like 400,000 people, men, were killed, like in a couple of days or a day or whatever it was, some quite short period of time. And there's a description I read some time ago of some person who walked out, you know, onto some slightly raised observation type point, and you couldn't see the ground for like, you know, a good few kilometers around. It was just dead bodies and heads and animals and just, and people, it was just immediately after it finished, and people screaming and just, it was like from another dimension, another world, and not a better world either, a hellish world. This just shocking scene, which was simply going on because of the ambition of one man, of Napoleon, that's all. Yeah. Anyway, it says here, Prabhupada translates, Maharaj Yudhisthira went to the scene of the massacre. Oh, it must have been just, you know, unimaginable by our standards, what a scene it was. And Maharaj Yudhisthira felt that this has all happened because of me, for me, so I could become the king. That's all. Nothing else, really. Just so I could become the king. So in other words, I am totally responsible for the death of all these so many people. I'm responsible just to satisfy my material ambitions and so on, to become the big ruler and all that. And so many fantastic number of men, they're just slaughtered in all sorts of drastic and dramatic ways. And I'm responsible. It's all on my head. Every last drop of blood is on my head. So what, Maharaj Yudhisthira was thinking specifically, what is going to happen to me? What sort of karma am I going to get? It's just going to be just unimaginable. As the scene is unimaginable, the karma is going to be unimaginable. And it's all just going to be just beyond comprehension. Yeah. So Maharaj Yudhisthira, he felt, he was, as Prabhupada says, afraid. He was just devastated, feeling that, you know, these people, they were living their lives and this whole thing doesn't really have anything to do with them. If there had not been a battle, they would have continued living their lives. But because of me, their lives were, you know, very viciously stopped. What is my future going to be? And either they performed or they were thinking of performing. I forget exactly. But at least they were thinking of performing an Ashvamedha Yajna, which is the biggest type of karmakandiya, materialistic sacrifice. It's the biggest and most powerful. And at least they were thinking of it, maybe they did it, to try and offset all that karma. But then, you know, it was just like a drop in a bucket. It may relieve us from the karma of killing 100 men. But what about the other 639,900,900. It's all going to be on my head. So what's my future going to be? It's just incomprehensible. So he was afraid. He was in great anxiety. And therefore, he went to Lord Krishna, he questioned Krishna, and Krishna just went, you know, like, go ask Bhishma Dev. He knows about karma and ruling and the things you have to do when you rule and the consequences of doing those things to maintain your ruling and dealing with enemies and just all of that. Let Bhishma instruct you. So it's a very interesting situation, and you know, we'll read on and we'll see that Bhishma does instruct him, and then, as Prabhupada mentions here, Bhishma Dev, he then leaves his body in the presence of Lord Sri Krishna, fixing his mind on the Lord and offering very nice prayers, beautiful prayers to the Lord, really taking shelter of the Lord. So it's all very nice, very interesting. And the situation itself, as Srila Prabhupada says here right in the beginning of the purport, in this ninth chapter, as it is willed by Lord Sri Krishna, Bhishma Dev will impart instructions to King Yudhisthira. So that, you know, it's a special arrangement, so that a devotee, not just the Lord, you know, instructing on some matter, but some devotee who's highly qualified in the field will instruct in a matter which is very important and really very relevant to human society, like essential instructions for human society, and a devotee is going to do it. And this will please the Lord, because he's so pleased when his devotees are glorified, or when his devotees become the focal points and do something important and convey some instructions or achieve some goal for all of humanity, for going into the future, for all of history, some foundational instructions for humankind. Just like Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a whole arrangement behind how it's spoken, in what context, and to whom, and all these types of considerations. And that's also the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And of course then there's Bhagavad Gita. And there's a whole background arrangement by the Supreme Personality of Godhead so that he could speak Bhagavad Gita to his devotee for the benefit of humanity. So you get all these different arrangements in these Vedic literatures, and there's so many arrangements made under very dramatic circumstances, very extraordinary circumstances, and very important things happen, and ultimately important instructions are given for all of humanity. And it's all, as Prabhupada says, as it's willed by the Lord. Is it Krishna? Maybe. That's just a strategic maneuver, just so we don't fall asleep. Right. So there's a number of these arrangements made, which we are aware of. Bhagavad Gita, of course, it's the arrangement of Krishna. Special arrangement. Then another special arrangement that we just mentioned is about the speaking of the whole of Srimad Bhagavatam. And if we mentioned this the other day when we were here. But Maharaj Parikshit was cursed when he should not have been cursed, but he was cursed in a very sort of unpleasant way, but it was the will of the Lord. And then, just immediately afterwards, the father of the cursor, the father Shamika Rishi, he came and told Maharaj Parikshit, who was not aware at that point, up till that point, he told him, you know what, my son cursed you to die in 7 days by the bite of a snake bird, and that's it. But, Shamika Rishi said, however, if you like, just tell me, I'll withdraw the curse, because it's a nonsense curse. I'll withdraw it, and you carry on. Live a long life, enjoy the kingdom, and so on. And Maharaj Parikshit, being a very deep thinker, he said, thank you for the offer, but don't withdraw the curse. It's the will of the Lord. I'm going to accept the will of the Lord. You know, he could have said, yes, please, thank you, withdraw the curse, and I'll live on. And Srimad Bhagavatam would not have been spoken. Or it had already been spoken by Srila Vyasadeva to Shukadeva Goswami, but not under special circumstances which would really capture the attention of people. So Maharaj Parikshit said, yes, okay, I accept it. And he did, and Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken in that very special way. And here we are reading it today. It was the will of the Lord. This is a similar situation. Maharaj Yudhisthira, he is a great Mahabhagavat, eternal associate of the Lord. He's in just another category, actually, because he's an associate of the Lord. He just travels around with the Lord from universe to universe, because he's just such a special devotee. And he's so knowledgeable. You know, he's fully qualified as a Mahabhagavat in terms of understanding of Shastra, understanding of codes of Dharma, Kshatriya codes, and all these Dharma considerations of Dharma religious principles and so forth. He's fully aware. He's an authority. Plus, he knew very clearly he actually didn't want to fight. He couldn't really be bothered. But Krishna, he knew Krishna wanted the fight to take place. So, well, if it's the will of the Lord. And he understood the principles of surrender to the Lord and how it works when you perform any duty for the Lord. Krishna, you know, he had been there. When Krishna instructed Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, he knew all these things inside out. And he knew that this was the will of the Lord, therefore it is right. But still, somehow, he became totally bewildered and, as stated here, afraid. What is going to happen to me? I'm so sinful. So he knew better. He knew a lot better. But Krishna, it was willed by Lord Sri Krishna. Krishna had a plan. We want the principles of Dharma, occupational duty, Prabhupada says, Kshatriya Dharma, ruling, governing. We want these principles to be stated And who better to do it than Bhishma? And in that way, Bhishma will be glorified, Maharaj Yudhisthira will become properly fixed in consciousness, Bhishma Dev will depart from this world in the best circumstances. It's all the will of the Lord, achieving a few different objectives at one time. Yes, so this is what's going on here. It's a special plan of the Lord, and ultimately for our benefit too, not just Yudhisthira's benefit, but for our benefit too. So we can read on and see what Bhishma Dev says about these things, and then learn about these important subject matters, how to govern and oversee humanity so that they systematically, properly move forward on the path back to Godhead, but in an organized society, sort of social framework. Bhishma Dev, as mentioned here, was lying on a bed of arrows. It sounds kind of quaint, doesn't it? Lying on a bed of arrows. And I even just checked the picture in the front that he's lying on a bed of arrows. Unfortunately, he was not exactly, I mean, he was lying on it, but he was lying in a bed of arrows. And the picture, it depicts him like there's these arrows and he's on the arrows and there's a few of them in his chest. But other pictures in our books, actually, you'll see that the arrows are through the body into the ground to the point that, is it the Bhagavatam or Mahabharata says, you could not put two fingers down between any two arrows, you know, to sort of to touch his body. The arrows, there were just so many arrows. Because Arjuna had used a special weapon. I forget the name, but anyway. Some special weapon. Arjuna had hid behind Shikhandi. Right? Shikhandi, who had been Ambika, is it? Ambika in a previous lifetime, who had wanted to marry Bhishma, but anyway, Bhishma declined, and she was placed in a very, very unfortunate situation that she couldn't be married to anyone else. And so, yeah, she got so upset about that, to the point that she basically sort of arranged, you could say, engineered things to be born as a male, but like a sort of, I don't know what you'd say, I don't know if you'd say transsexual, or, you know, some sort of mixed sexual identity, with the purpose of killing Bhishma. So on the battlefield, Arjuna put Shikhandi in front of him, and he took out some, he put some special, it looks like an arrow, but it's an astra, it's a weapon, mystical weapon, that you fire one arrow and it expands into many arrows as it's flying. So yes, so Shikhandi stood in front of Arjuna, on Arjuna's chariot, as they approached Bhishma. And Bhishma, knowing this is not really a warrior, this is a woman, really, sort of like something like that, put down his weapons, wouldn't fight against Shikhandi. And Arjuna took the opportunity of releasing the super arrow weapon, which expanded into many and penetrated the whole body from head to toe. Haribol, what a way to go. But Bhishma had a benediction because of his vow of celibacy. He had a benediction that he would not have to die. He would not have to die unless he wanted to. When he wanted to, he could die just like that. But until he wanted to, they could drop an atomic bomb on his head if they wanted, but he wouldn't die. So he was lying there on the bed of arrows, so to speak, but alive on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Yeah, and we've all been hurt sometimes, physically, you know, something, whatever. And so we all know what it feels to be hurt and to feel physical pain. But can you imagine? You can't imagine having all these arrows through your body and lying there for a couple of days. Or something like that. Yeah, something like that. But he was still alive. But, you know, he must have been feeling it. So, yes, Bhishma Dev, what an amazing personality. So, Bhishma Dev is Mahajan. He's a Mahajan, one of the great 13 great authorities on devotional service. And he is about to instruct Yudhisthira and then depart in the presence of Lord Krishna. And because of this, so many great personalities assembled. All the great souls in the universe, the rishis amongst the demigods, the brahmins and kings, all assembled. Parvata Muni, Narada, Donya, Vyas, Bharadvaj, Parasuram, on and on and on. All these great personalities assembled there because they knew this extraordinary person is going to leave. Shukadev Goswami was there. So that's the scene here. And it's for our instruction. Ultimately, at least. I mean, it's certainly. But ultimately, it's for our instruction. Hare Krishna. Any question? No? Understood everything? No problem? Okay. Good girl. Any comments or questions? Yes?
With regards to the timeline, in the previous chapter we read a few verses about Maharaj Yudhisthira, and then just before that it was praised by Queen Kunti.
Right.
So, how did it change from, I mean, we did the verse, but how did it change from praise of Queen Kunti to Ma? How did we start speaking about Maharaj Yudhisthira, and then was there a timeline change? Did we go from the
the
future to the past?
No. The battle finished. Krishna's business is finished. And he's about to leave. He had already stayed on for a few days. And now he's about to go home. So then he was stopped by Queen Kunti. And then he's about to leave again. And then he sees Yudhisthira is distraught. So then they go out to the battlefield. Yeah. Well, the battle finishes. Ashvatthama, the whole Ashvatthama incident happens, and they Yeah. Yes. Anyway, yeah, basically like that. The Ashvatthama incident happens. And then Krishna's about, and then, you know, they take a break, a little break. Then Krishna's about to leave, to go back to Dwarka. And then Krishna sees that Yudhisthira's upset. And then this all happens. Yeah. That's basically the timeline. See, yeah, there's a verse here. Anyway. It begins in the 7th chapter, text 13 and 14. That, you know, begins the story just immediately after the battle, then enters into the story of Ashvatthama. Yeah. And he, you know, that was like the day or the night that the battle finished. Yeah. Then he killed the sleeping sons, then the next day he tried to kill Parikshit. He was captured, punished. Then Lord Krishna stayed on a bit and actually there were 3 Ashvamedha sacrifices performed after the battle. It says here in the beginning of chapter 8. Yeah. They performed 3 to make up for the killing of all the people, the warriors. They did their Ashvamedha yagyas. Krishna's about to leave. Queen Kunti stops him. He's about to leave again. He sees Yudhisthira's disturbed. And then we come to this point. Any comment, Baba Bhamaniya? Yes.
So it's maybe speculating that maybe we're reading about the pain that Bhishma is feeling. I was thinking of the how Lord Chaitanya took Haridas Thakur's pain. Like that. I was thinking, do you think perhaps Krishna took Bhishma's pain?
Well, I think, you know, as you said, I think it's a bit of a speculation. So I don't know. I don't recall reading any comment of, you know, that sort. But maybe, but who knows?
Well, Prabhupada mentioned once that to make 2 more altars, because Narayan Muni and in one of our temples, that Narayan Muni and Lord Shiva come for the evening arshti. So
Prabhupada said that.
Yeah.
Day. Okay.
One of our temples, somewhere in the world, he asked them to make a separate two more chairs or Vyasasans.
Oh, something like that.
Yeah,
yeah.
For Narayan Muni and Lord Brahma or Shiva.
Oh, Brahma, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So, and even previously he mentioned that Narayan Muni, didn't you see Narayan Muni?
Right.
Yeah. So, if the material world is such a hellish or foolish place that the demigods wouldn't even come here to do their business or whatever, what do you think may have attracted them to come during Prabhupada?
Your singing during the arti. Yeah, just the association of the devotees. Yeah. Because Bhaktivinoda Thakur in the arti song, or, you know, the Gaura arti song, Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about how Lord Brahma's there, and you you know, different devotees are there. Shiva, Sukha, Narada. So they come. You know, they wouldn't come and mix with the materialist. As it becomes more clear what the materialists are like, it becomes easier to understand why they just wouldn't come. Just wouldn't come. But of course they're concerned, because they're, you know, very great, compassionate personalities. They're very concerned. And they're very happy to see when people become devotees and start doing all the devotional activities. Yeah. So I'm sure when you're singing sometimes, Lord Brahma says to Narada Muni, "Hey, Sholto's singing down in Nidran. Hey, let's go down." And they go. Yeah. Really? Yeah.
Yes. Thank you so much. Bhagavatam was mentioning Shikhandi. There's a cross between a male and a female.
Something, yeah.
Yes. So in today's society, we also have this prominent, and in certain countries, it's even accepted as part of society.
Right.
So, Maharaj, can you please explain a little bit, if you can, how this happens? Is it to do with one's consciousness of leaving the body in the previous life?
Well, in that sense, yes, a person's in some very, you know, very mixed consciousness. You know, really, what it is that Kali Yuga is progressing, despite the scientific advancement, sophistication, wealth, and all these types of things. But Kali Yuga is progressing, meaning the degradation of the persons, of the character. Yeah. And as a result, things which they don't normally happen on the middle planetary levels, they're more things which happen on hellish levels, they're starting to enter human society. Prabhupada said, or, you know, we were told, Prabhupada said, that some of these, no, we're going back now to the 60s, 70s, that sort of period when Prabhupada was present. Some of the very popular musicians and singers and the whole youth culture leaders, those people, they were sent from the hellish planets. Yeah, to drag down the youth. Yes. So, you know, normally it would be more clear cut. I mean, there's always been, and including in the Bhagavatam, it's mentioned the term, the English term eunuch is used. You know, it's always been there. But becoming prominent and becoming like accepted, normal on an everyday level. Normally those people, they would be in their own sort of space. And they'd come out under certain circumstances. Even in India, it's still like that, you're probably aware. Yeah, but now like in America, you know, which is meant to be the leader, then, look, you know, I'm from New Zealand. You want to hear about advancement of Kali Yuga? In New Zealand, there was, just a few years ago, a member of parliament voted in who was a transsexual, a male, but now a female, got voted in. And it wasn't some secret thing and you find out, wow, this was actually a man a couple of years ago. No, it was completely open. Totally open. And I was, I used to go visit my parents in New Zealand. And I, on the news once on television, I saw, and, this lady is addressing the parliament about something, and then, you know, we found out this is who she is. And in New Zealand, I don't think right now, but at that time, the opposition party in parliament, they were called the Green Party. And they, you know, sort of into nature and stuff. But their symbol, like their logo, was the marijuana leaf. Yes. You know, the classic with the five leaves, you know, recognizable. They were the opposition in parliament. Because New Zealand is, you know, excessively liberal. But yeah, things which actually belong in hell gradually move in as, you know, because people from there start getting born here. Yeah. And people become accepting of these things. Whereas, you know, say, whatever it was, 40, 30 years ago, some, within our lifetimes, such types of people, it was like completely unacceptable. Yeah.
Perhaps there's a whole culture in Vaishnava that within ISKCON that seems to have local ISKCON that do all the same things that we do, that they call it Vaishnava.
Yep.
That's
Galva.
Yes,
Galva. Gay and lesbian Vaishnava Association.
So are they not accepted, even if they follow four regulations?
Well, I don't think they really do. But anyway, the thing is this, because if you look, there was some controversy some years ago when Bhakti Tirthamaraj was still living, so that's at least 10 years ago. But if you read some of their things, you know, they interpret some scriptural statements about certain activities of Krishna or the appearance of Krishna in certain respects, that Krishna had like that sort of side to him. Yeah. And going too far. You know, it's one thing if people are just sort of, you know, programmed into that sort of state. And, you know, there are within ISKCON, as regular devotees who do follow the regulative principles, there are people who have, they're in that state. They're in that state. But they're serious devotees. You know, they're very, they're good, as good basically as anybody else. So that's one thing. But now this, it's, they're trying to validate doing that. Not just being that, but doing it. Yeah. Including all the actual sexual activities and, yeah. And sort of inferring that Krishna did such things. It's taking it too far. Yeah.
But they still accept it because if we get a preach to like the gay and lesbian society of South Africa, for example, because the Christian religion does not accept who they are. Well, they are
called, oh, I wouldn't say that. I think they're split. A lot of them do.
Well, I guess. And more traditional religions don't. So when we speak, to them, we say, so I'm wondering whether we say they're incorrect, and we say, no, ISKCON will accept you because we speak about the soul, and it doesn't regulating matters, as long as you follow four regulating
matters. Yeah, as long as they're decent and don't try and, you know, influence others, you know, particularly like that. People who may be marginal or just, you know, sort of degrade others by their association. Yeah, of course. But I mean, you know, discussion's still going on. But we wouldn't at this point, and I don't think we ever will, accept like marriage of two males or two females. Because marriage is there as a context for having children, having your own children. Yeah. Yeah. Well, how did we get into that? Oh, yeah, it's your fault, wasn't it? Last one.
So, I grew up in Durban and we used to listen to like rap and hip-hop and R&B by certain stars like Tupac and Jay-Z and Beyoncé, and there were always myths that these people are so rich and they're always on TV for making so many millions a year, and there was always myths like they're part of Illuminati and they're demoniac, and if you play their songs backwards you hear the devil speak and all those funny things. But now that you mentioned that people from lower planets can take birth here just to drive off society and to degrade them more, things like what we used to hear actually make sense, that they come just to...
Yeah, well, I'm sure some of it makes sense. You know, playing things backwards, I don't know about that. But, yeah, they, you know, unfortunately... I don't know about just the young people, but in these cases, the young people, they become very attracted to people who are, you know, like very cool and very hip, but degraded. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the degradation is attractive. It's particularly attractive to them. You know, like, at least in my parents' lifetime, Frank Sinatra, he sang in a certain kind of suggestive way. Although, you know, he was just, like, externally, his appearances are very conservative, but kind of suggestive crooning. Then came Elvis Presley, and, you know, who was more degraded, actually. Then came the Beatles, who were more degraded, and, you know, the Rolling Stones, who were more degraded. And then it's got, but the degradedness is attractive. Yeah. Yeah. So it's going on. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki.